Welcome back, everyone, to the Dark Forest. If you're new to the channel, consider subscribing and smashing that thumbs up. Download your favorite scary story and listen to me on the go wherever you may dwell on my Apple Podcast and Spotify, Tales from the Dark Forest. Now, let's get spooky. We were watching TV one night. Grandpa had his chair and I had my grandmother's old rocker. I sighed heavily. It had been a long day. Grandpa had me mending a fence most of the day, a job that required 2 trips to town, the hauling of some heavy materials, and a lot of sweating in the afternoon sun. Of course, Grandpa hadn't done any of that other than riding in the town. What he had done was sit on a big rock and watch me work, filling my day with stories about this and that or another. The fence had finally been mended just as darkness began to creep in, and I was rocking casually as we watched something of Grandpa's choosing. Grandpa watched very little television, but when he did, it was usually only 3 things. He watched the news 3 times a day, watched Hadron Meadows at 8, and 4 for the Fish and Game Report, and liked to watch Spook Central. Spook Central was a show about local paranormal investigators who liked to go around and inspect haunts in the area. They went to many historic and infamous locations, and generally stirred up the things that went bump around there. It came on most nights on Channel 12, with new episodes and reruns, and Grandpa loved it. He watched Spook Central the way some men watch sitcoms. He was always so amused of the crew's antics, and he was always chuckling at something they were saying or doing. On today's episode, they were talking about banishing a demon from the ruins of an old church, and I heard Grandpa scuff as they talked about means of cleansing.
"Bunch of hacks," he said, shaking his head.
I glanced over at him, raising an eyebrow at the comment. "So aside from devil cats, forest lights, and cursed insects, you're also an expert on exorcisms?"
"Of course," he said,
confident as ever.
"I went with Grandma to several houses while she was helping people out. I watched her get rid of all kinds of haints and spirits that bedeviled people, but I only watched her fail once."
He paused for a dramatic effect before adding,
"Luckily, the snake-handling man came around."
I looked at him oddly. "The what?"
"The snake-handling man. What's the matter, boy? Didn't your daddy ever take you to see the snake-handler?"
"I mean, I saw a man handling snakes at the zoo once, but it sounds like you're talking about one of the religious ones."
"Exactly,"
Grandpa said, getting a little excited.
"Except this fellow was the real deal."
I muted the TV, settling in for another Grandpa's story coming on. "Sounds better than anything on TV," I said, turning the rocker to look at him. Grandpa chuckled.
"That's because, unlike all the claptrap on the TV, this story is true. When I was about 11, shortly after the cricket incident, my grandmother took me under her wing and decided it was high time I was given a proper education by the way of the woods. She had me over to her house most every afternoon so I could learn herbcraft and woodcraft. She taught me about healing with poultices and salves, about repelling things that may want to get into the house with symbols and little constructed things that hold intention. She also taught me about creatures of the forest and the old things that lurked in the deep parts. Grandma was a wealth of information. I wish I had been more thankful for the short time I had with her. I had studied with her for about 6 months when I arrived one afternoon to find her putting some things into a bag. I had seen her do this many times before, but the longer I watched her, the more I realized that this was different. We had gone to people's houses before a cleanse of presents or dispel a haint, but I'd always watched her select ingredients with care and decisiveness. Today, her hands shook as she selected herbs and bundles. and as one of the bottles slid from her shaking hand, I felt my blood run cold. For the first time in my life, I was seeing my grandmother afraid.
Despite for better judgment, I'm taking you with me tonight. Not for any lacking in yourself. You're a fine boy, but this place we're going is bad.
Bad?
I asked.
Unsure of what she meant. How do you mean? She gave me an extremely hard look, as though we were weighing the idea of telling me things I may not be prepared to hear.
You know about Haynes. You've seen the lights. You've seen the darkness that could find you when you least expect it. What we're going after tonight might be worse. Sometimes, there are things that can get into a house and make it bad. Bad as can be. These things can make people bad, too.
But, I stuttered, the fear creeping into me too now. You've put those things out before.
True, but this is different. This is the true evil, the old evil, the kind they talk about in church. I've faced it before, but this time feels different. This time. She pauses and weighs the blow again before she dealt it. I'm not sure I have the strength or the will to cast them out.
She gathered her provisions as I sat pondering the nature of our work that night. Then, as the afternoon sun began to dip just the teeniest bit, we set out for our work. We arrived as the sun hitting midpoint of its set, and I immediately wished I had never left my grandmother's home. Have you ever seen a place from your car? A perfectly normal place, and just feel like it was wrong? You couldn't tell why, and you couldn't say why, but the whole place just makes your skin crawl. The shadows linger a bit too thickly around the porch. The darkness nestles like bugs in the eaves, and the whole place just seems like a grinning mouth inviting you to come on in. You drive past and you shudder, but you just aren't sure why you're shuddering or what makes that place so scary. The house had an aura about it, and I could see Grandma getting nervous as well. The woman who answered the door was a friend of Grandma's that I had seen at the house before. I thought her name might be Ella or Ellen, but she never looked so ragged as she did now. Her gray hair was a mess, all tangled and looking worry-worn. Her face was pitted with worry lines, and she seemed on the verge of tears. Whether there were tears of relief or sorrow, I wasn't sure.
Thank God, Lizza. Come in, come in. I didn't know what else to do.
But then she noticed me, and her face clouded over.
Are you sure you want to bring him here?
He's learning the trade, Els. The boy needs to see what it's like. He needs to be prepared for what he might face.
The woman nodded and led us into her small home. It was a little more than a one-story farmhouse set back against the rock of the mountain. The place had a musty smell that made me think the roof likely leaked in the spring when the snowmelt came off the hills, and it held a darkness that reminded me of a cave. The woman led us into her kitchen, casting frightened glances at a shadowy room that lay behind a tacked-up quilt. She made us tea and talked to us about what had been happening. Grandma smiled and nodded, the smoke from the tea ringing her face, but I barely listened. My eyes were only for what laid beyond that simple quilt. It wasn't a noise, but it was like a low hum that seemed to warble across the senses. I had a friend years later, a drinking buddy that lived under one of those big power lines. I used to hate getting drunk over there because I knew I wouldn't sleep a wink unless I blacked out. That hum, that soft quirling of currents and watts, always reminded me of that sound I heard from behind that quilt. It was like tiny people discussing monumental things, like hateful men planning mischief quietly.
And so I called you,
the woman said, and I found myself jerked back into the conversation, her voice gagging up on the edge of tears.
I'll do what I can, Ellie,
but this sort of thing might be beyond me. I've never done battle with anything like you're talking about, and I'm not sure that my talents will be enough to rid you of it. Have you contacted the Catholic parish over in L.A.J.? This sounds more like their ball of wax.
I wrote them when it started, when he came back from the quarry like this, but they never got back with me. I've spoken to the Baptist preacher, the Pentecostal man, even that snake handler down the holler. You know the one. The one with the revival tent that blew into town about a month ago. You're the only one who's come to help me.
Grandma soaked all this in and gave her a nod. Then she finished her tea and asked to see Daryl. As Ellie walked towards the quilt, I felt my stomach tighten. She slid it aside, the motion so much like that of a barker as he slid the cover away from the freak show tent and revealed the most darkly hideous man I had ever seen at the time. Calling him fat would have not done him much justice. Daryl, a man I realized later that I knew, looked like someone in his late stages of pregnancy and who was preparing to birth 8 or 9 children. He laid on a couch that sagged beneath him, and the smell of that small room, no doubt once a sitting room, was atrocious. Daryl had clearly been just going where he would, and the smell was rank. He laid on his back, his head lolling on his neck, as his stomach pressed upward like a hillock. His gorge was of withering flesh, purple and veined and pulsing like an egg sac ready to burst. The room was shady, the windows covered, and only the barest of light spilled through the opening of the sitting room. I didn't want to go in there, but my grandma put a hand on my shoulder. I felt an assuredness roll through me, and I knew that everything would be okay. When we stepped into the room, the man had let his head flop back on his neck and stared at us in that upside-down way that children often do. He began to burble wetly at himself as we approached, a soapy, marshy sound that pulsed like tar from his bulging lips.
When did he begin to? Grandma seemed to search for the words before flopping her hands at him. Get like this? She finally said, words dissenting her in the face of this monstrous man.
About a week ago, about 3 days before I called you, he came back from the quarry one night, well after dark, and just wasn't himself. The next 2 days, he was laid up. I thought he may have had the flu, but then I woke up one morning and found him on the couch. He started swelling, and I called the doctor to check him out. After the doctor couldn't find anything wrong with him, he suggested I just make him comfy and see if he overed it or not. That night, I laid in bed and watched the shadows dance on the walls. I heard him laughing and gargling in the sitting room and saw this strange light coming from the doorway. That's when I hung up the quilt, and the next day I came to see you.
Grandma looked like she wanted to say more, but when she looked down, she realized that the rotund man was staring straight at her. When his mouth slid open, his purple tongue lolled out. His rancid breath was nearly as bad as the words that spilled out around it.
Witch,
he rasped.
Witch, witch, witch.
As he graveled out his accusation, the scant light we had began to flicker. The walls began to spin a little, the shadows dancing as the oppressive darkness became more claustrophobic. The swollen cadaver began to rock as he crackled and accused, and I pressed myself against my grandma as the night bled into the couple's humble abode.
Ellie Mae, how can you let a witch into our house? You know what it says in the good book about suffering witches to live?
I would assume that whatever you are, you likely have some understanding about what the Bible says about demons as well.
The fleshy hillock laughed, and I could swear that hands seemed to be pressing against its body from inside as I watched it.
Do you imagine they cast me out?
It asked, voice full of scorn.
Do you imagine that your grasping power is a match for mine?
Grandma reached into her pocket and pulled out a bundle of sage as if an answer. That's how it began. Grandma lit the sage, its smoke wafting and dancing as it seemed to heliograph into the darkness. The smoke took on the forms of warding, swirling towards the dark shapes that surrounded the swollen hulk on the couch. As the smoke swirled, Grandma chanted in the old words, words she had yet to teach me and never truly would, it turned out. She seemed to become smoke herself as she swayed amongst the darkness. And as her hands reached towards me, I would place the items into them. Different items and charms, herbs, and things of power. And it was as if my hands knew the right things that she needed before my brain truly did. She dabbed the man with the concoctions, wafted smoke and charm over him, and I saw his shoulder as she worked. He did not like her work, but it still seemed to be no more than an irritation upon his skin. As time passed, I began to feel the sun must rise soon. It had to have been hours, days since Grandma began, and I could see the sweat standing out on her. She was growing tired, her energy depleting, and that only seemed to encourage this hateful specter. He crackled and snapped his teeth at her, the bones coming together like rocks in a quarry, and I found myself growing cold as I watched him rebuff her attempts to cast him away.
Foolish old woman, your incantations are nothing to the banging of bones and screeching of apes. I was old when your kind first scratched against the dirt. And you cannot face me and win, shaman.
Grandma didn't let it show, but it appeared that she had come to the same conclusion. She began to retreat, the two of us backing towards the quilted egress point. But the shadows would not allow it. They closed in around the square of light, thick and claustrophobic, and I feared to let them touch me. It appeared that dueling to a draw would not be enough for whatever resided within Daryl. It wanted to win, and it knew that it had us on the ropes. Grandma looked down at me as she came to realize this as well, and apologized as she drew me close. Then the door banged open like a shotgun, and I heard the hard tack of boots on the sturdy boards as someone came towards the sitting room. The darkness parted for that one. And as he surveyed the scene, he smiled in the loony, sane way that men do when they have spent too much time away from men. The way woodsfolk or desert dwellers sometimes smile when tried by some child of the fluorescent lights and the steady pavement who had never known true darkness as more than a dim movie scene. He wore a long coat, his chest bare, with shaggy jeans that nearly covered his rundown cowboy boots. He had a wide-brimmed hat, less like a cowboy's and more like a farmer's or a preacher's, and on his belt held a withering sack that hissed and rattled. The hair that poked from beneath the hat was white as midday clouds, and he looked like a scarecrow filled with barbed wire. I have no doubt that he was a little bit crazy, but he was the sanity that we needed at that moment. He came strutting into the room, untying the sack from his belt, and the creature's glee seemed forced now.
Some new shaman to try his luck. Come to me, pretender. Come to me and know what it means to stand before Legion.
The man's voice was at odds with his appearance, and his voice was rich and strident as it cut the shadows in the house to ribbons.
I am no pretender. And you are not Legion. You are a sad collection of lesser demons, fit only to scare children and vex those who are used to fighting less practical creatures. No offense, my dear.
Grandma seemed to take his declaration well from her stunned position near the door. When he reached inside the bag, the hollow rattle preceding the biggest timber rattler I had ever seen, the creature cowered a little as the face of the betrayer came out to greet him.
Here is your brother, Prince of Lies and Lord of Flies. Come now before the throne and feel his judgment. He held the rattler around the head, his thumb controlling the top as his fingers opened that killing mouth. The couch shook as the monstrous man tried to escape him, but as the strange man began to pray, really spinning the hellfire, I saw the snake begin to glow. Its head and body were suddenly reached in a glowing aura, and that aura began to draw the darkness from Daryl. The murk seemed to come swimming from his open mouth, and as it entered the serpent, the preacher dropped it and watched it try to escape. Then, as swift as any snake, the snake handler brought the bottom of that bag run-down boot onto the snake's head and smashed it out of existence. The man-thing on the couch screamed in agony, its ginormous body quaking like water in a pool. But the snake handler was far from done. He reached in again and drew out another snake, the black body of a moccasin coming from the bag this time. It hissed and reared at him, but he had taught it just so, and its writhing stopped as the corona of light enveloped it. The feet of the couch squealed in protest as the demon tried to lunge away, but they had made their vessel too large, and escape seemed like a happy dream before those dripping fangs. His bag was limitless. The snake handler seemed to pull more varieties of serpents from his croaker sack than I had ever seen before. Some were venomous, some were just plain old slitherers. But their fate was always the same. The floor was soon thick with clotted snake blood, and the man on the couch seemed to be shrieking with every otherworldly presence pulling from him. All at once, he was less of a mountain and more of a rotund boulder. Suddenly, he was merely portly, his flesh still stretched and bruised where the demons had taken up inside him. He tried to flee once, his legs buckling under him before the snake handler could reach the shoulder and push him back against the couch. The snake he pulled from the bag was the biggest yet, a massive rattlesnake with glistening fangs. And the demon quaked within him, knowing his time had come.
"You don't dare. You don't dare. You are nothing. I was old when your ancestors drew out of the primordial ooze."
"My ancestors stumbled naked from the garden, Wrench, and you will return to the pits from whence you came." The demon screamed cascaded over us as he was laboriously drawn from the man, and the snake actually turned to strike as it fell heavily to the floor, and the snake handler seemed to sag as the man on the couch breathed like a long-distance runner passing the finish line. Somehow, it had escaped my notice from the shadows were receding as he worked, and we now stood in the dimly lit sitting room of Ellie and Daryl's house. Daryl wouldn't wake up for another 3 days, and when he did, he told my grandma about breaking through into an underground tunnel and falling into a pool of the coldest water he had ever felt. As he pulled himself out, shivering on the bank, he was assaulted by things he could not see, and he had known nothing until he had came to this couch. He didn't remember the snake handler, the demons, or anything. Daryl lived until 1973, dying at the age of 93. And he always thanked God for his longevity. He should really have just thanked the snake handler, though, because otherwise, the demons would have likely just ate him up. That night, though, with the work completed, the snake handler bent down and scooped up the remains of his snakes into the croaker sack. He tipped his hat to Ellie, now hugging her husband and crying over him, and told her he was really sorry for the mess. He clomped out the door, stopping only long enough to look at Grandma and me as he passed a word with us.
"You gave it your best, ye child of the white, but there was just too much there for one person. You did your best. Know that God sees your efforts."
Then he left, never to be seen again in these parts. I had stopped rocking at this point in the story. It was now simply sitting, gap-mouthed and staring at my grandpa.
"Quite a tale, isn't it?"
Grandpa asked. his old chair creaking a little as the two of us sat in the aftermath. "So," I started, trying to figure out what I wanted to say. "So you know a little bit about the backwoods ways, like your grandma knew."
"Some," he admitted. "Grandma died before she could properly finish my training. But that is a whole different story and one I'll need to prepare for before I tell it."
"Could you teach me?" I asked, fully aware by now that there were things in this world, in this very forest, that I did not understand and did not want to run afoul of. Grandpa smiled.
"Son, I would be delighted."